Red Eyes Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I hope you're comfortable wherever you are in the world and that you are ready for some radio. Our website, I hope you know, is redeyescreations.com, and that is the place to go to find out more about us, what we do, and our program if you're a new listener. Don't forget to check out our new TV episode on Red Eyes as well, on Illuminati symbolism in Hollywood movies. Enjoy. Today we have Lucas with us on the program, and he made an interesting presentation recently at Brave New Books in Austin, Texas, that you might have seen, on the topic of the Star Destroyer and the future of mankind. This is basically about Planet X, or Wormwood, if you want to call it that. Lucas also goes into space anomalies and basically something upcoming on a level of catastrophe, but also tying all of this in together with ancient civilizations, their art and petroglyphs. Do we need to be concerned? Well, let's talk with Lucas and ask him about his presentation and see what's going on. What are the elite planning? Do they know something big is on the way? Are they preparing for something that the majority don't know about? If you look at Lucas' presentation, you'll get an idea that something is going on, and some of the hints that points toward this is towards Denver, especially the Denver airport, and we'll talk more about this later as well. Lucas' website is the-rabbits-hole.com, therabbitshole.com. Go there to look at the presentation and also to find out more about Lucas. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Lucas. I'm glad that we got a hold of you, and I'm excited to have you with us today. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
Thank you for spending some time with us. I really liked your presentation, as I mentioned, and there's many things that we are going to talk about today. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit in terms of your background and so forth as well. As I understand it, as many of us actually, you began with 9/11 research and then moved on to study the New World Order, including some of the symbolism, art, and architecture features at Denver Airport. Isn't that right, Lucas?
Well, it actually started much longer than that, longer ago than that. It started back in, I guess, 1985, when it all started when I was 16 years old, and I was at a party with my friends out in California, and the cops came and raided the party, and we all ran, and we went to my friend's house, and his mother said, we were kids and we'd been drinking and all that, and she said that you boys better have a good time now while you're kids, because when you're older, the New World Order is going to put a chip in you, and you're not going to be able to do anything fun. So that kind of started me on the quest of wondering what the heck the New World Order was, and I've been researching it ever since, honestly.
There you go. And then you made a film on 9/11 as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it was called The Ultimate Con. It is now the most watched YouTube video on the subject of 9/11 of all time. It's up to over 15 million views now. And basically, it got so popular because I didn't put any conjecture or theory into it. I just laid out a bunch of news stories in an order that formed a bigger picture.
All right, very interesting. We are not going to spend that much time on 9/11 today, of course. We have so much more recent stuff that we are interested in talking with Lucas about, primarily in terms of, what I'd like to begin with you, Lucas, is basically the Norway Spiral. We had a few guests on the program to outline some of their theories and ideas in terms of what actually happened up in Norway, what it was, what that might have been a sign of, and so forth. I'd like to get your take on that to begin on that end, Lucas.
Well, this is how it started. I began, going quickly back to 9/11. Once I researched 9/11, and I saw that there were all these obvious holes in their plot, I figured, how could such well-connected, well-funded people create a plot that had so many obvious holes in it? And when I stepped back and looked at it, and I said, well, they must have did that on purpose. Well, why would they do that on purpose? Because they were obviously trying to divert our attention and divide and conquer us with 9/11. So I started to do research into it further and further, and I found out that all the various conspiracies are the conspiracy, that they're purposely meant to be conspiracies to keep us divided. And I started looking at why. Well, I couldn't really find nothing in today's you know, propaganda that's out there on exactly what was going on. So I figured I would start researching the ancients to see if they had any idea and of a any kind of event. And sure enough, it didn't take long to start finding the spiral petroglyphs all around the world in the caves up on top of the mountains. And then what was interesting is I built this presentation and I went and showed it to all my friends, and then 3 days afterwards the Norway spiral happened. So here in the presentation I've got all these spirals, and then I'm telling my friends that there might be some sort of spiral event in the sky that everybody saw 3,000 some odd years ago, and then all of a sudden a couple days later the spiral happened. So that really was kind of a mind-blowing event for me.
What's your theory on how it was produced? Was it a natural phenomenon, or was it technology being used?
To be honest, I am not sure. I personally think that it was a natural phenomenon, because obviously they didn't have that technology 3,600 years ago when they all put the spirals and the petroglyphs and the pictographs. So to me, it had to be a natural event. And I'm not exactly sure what it is, and to me it's not really important what it is. It's I think it's just a cosmic event, whether it's a star, a planet, whether it's some sort of interaction with the sun and something else. I'm not exactly sure, but you know, thousands of years ago, everybody around the world saw that same thing and documented it in stone.
Now, is this the destroyer star, or is this an effect of the destroyer star, do you think, the spiral shape?
Well, it could be a number of things. We could have seen what is maybe a small black hole that's interlocked in an orbit with our sun. It could be a brown dwarf star. If it was a black hole, we might have seen a comet being sucked down into the black hole. And if it's a star, we could be seeing an interaction with a comet crashing into the star. Or it might have even been a test. Like, for instance, you noticed that the day it happened, all the world leaders were in that area, and they were doing the Peace Prize thing, I believe, for President Obama. Mm-hmm. And for all I know, it could have actually been a rocket specially designed to see this object in space. So they might have actually launched some sort of rocket that caused that spiral event, but they were obviously there to see something. I don't tend to believe it was a rocket. I tend to believe that it was probably a cosmic event that they were there to witness.
So no kind of symbolic significance from the elite's point of view, but rather a natural thing that they might have knowledge ahead of time that it was going to happen there. Do you think that's the case?
That's pretty much what I'm leaning towards, is that they all went there that day to see the event, and you know, that possibly, you know, this is a prelude to a bigger event that will happen that the whole world will see. And see, what I tend to believe is that spiral, the blue beam that's coming off of the spiral, if you look closely at the pictures, you'll notice that the sun was just about to rise when it happened. So that blue beam was headed right in the direction of the sun. That could be an interaction, an electrical or plasma interaction with that object and our sun. And also our sun has, about 2003 all the way till just recently, our sun has been putting out very low levels of luminosity, and I obviously we've just got the most snowfall ever in Dallas, Texas here, and we've got 3 snowfalls here in Austin, which is very unusual. It seems like the planet is much cooler than it was a few years ago, so it almost seems like this object may be sapping energy from the sun. I'm not exactly sure.
That's interesting, and I'm glad you brought up plasma as well, because that's another area which people have theorized, who are also looking into the mythological record about many ancient civilizations and such. They seem to have discovered that some kind of plasma phenomena, discharge between planets pretty much, or what have you, has caused these shapes actually to occur up in the heavens, and this is what the ancient people kind of drew down on their stones and stuff like that.
Yeah, there are theories that the sun is an electrical sun, and that every so often it belches out lots of iron. Basically, it produces a lot of iron in its core, and it becomes to a critical level, and it starts belching out massive amounts of iron. very well might have been that too. It might have been a giant iron comet that was belched out of the sun. It was still interacting electrically with the sun. It's really hard to tell because obviously you're not going to get anything out of science from it. They've all called it a Russian rocket, and we're leaving it at that.
Now, what can you tell us in terms of the elite and what you think that they are planning? You've connected various threads into this to kind of support your theory and so forth, and I know that Denver Airport has a big role to that it plays in all of this as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that and your kind of main thesis or theory in terms of what the elite think about all of this.
Okay. If I want to get down to the brass tacks of it, I believe that pretty much the elite families of the world have had information about this for close to maybe even over 100 years now, and they've been passing the information down through the generations, and they had an idea back around the turn of last century, and come time for in the 30s and 40s, I personally believe, now I can't 100% prove this, but I believe that World War II itself was actually a big diversion in order for the elites. It was more of an archaeological expedition than it was a war, that while everybody was worried about the war going on, the elites were paying the Nazis to span the globe, look for ancient artifacts, and once they found what they were looking for, they basically took their top echelons and brought them down to South America, including Hitler. They took some of the guys and threw them to the wolves at the Nuremberg trial, and they brought the most important ones of all, the scientists, under Operation Paperclip here to the United States, and they formed NASA to start planning for this event. And it wasn't until the 70s that they actually launched some spacecraft to track it, the Pioneers. And there's a NASA, I guess one of the heads, not the head, but one of the upper scientists at NASA, talking about how they were launching the Pioneers to go look for the 10th planet.
Hmm. Really interesting. I want to address the idea a little bit more there in terms of the Nazis and what they were up to, because if we want to call it an invasion or not, but we know that the first kind of excursion, as it were, out of Germany that the Nazis did was actually to Tibet. And many people have been theorizing that they were there looking for either knowledge or something else in terms of support, in terms of your theory here as well, that they had some kind of knowledge, contact with something out there, or they knew that something was coming. But are you saying in that sense then that they were kind of, they were meant to be the bullies of that time, that were meant to go around into these many different countries as they did to collect all the artifacts, knowledge, etc., and then to hand it out to other countries or maybe families, upper elite families later on?
Yeah, that's kind of what I believe, is that they were actually more into the expedition. I mean, for instance, they adopted the swastika as their symbol. The swastika comes from ancient India, and I believe that that is the symbol for the destroyer itself. And they adopted that as their symbol, and they were constantly looking for Atlantis. They were looking for the origins of man, and they were very interested in genetics and understanding how humans came about and where we came from. And even in Indiana Jones movies, you can see that they were looking for the Holy Grail. They were looking for the Ark of the Covenant and things like that. They were just I believe it was more of a scientific expedition than anything else.
Absolutely. Spear of Destiny. There's many different artifacts, allegedly, that they've gotten their hands on, and now it's turned out elsewhere. So who do you think is kind of sitting on the primary knowledge, as it were? Or is there any top families that are kind of trying to finance their way in terms of getting themselves off planet? Or how do you think that they will go about this? Hide underground, etc.? Are there alternatives there, maybe?
Well, yeah, I think that that there are a few families, obviously the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and other ones that are involved in this, people that have had their fingers in the pie for a long, long time, since the turn of last century almost. And I'm sure that there's a lot more involved in it. It's just it's a great time when we're all trying to figure out the truth here. And it's slowly starting to come out finally, and it's definitely an interesting time. Ugh, don't even know what to think at this point, to be honest. So much going on.
There is, and What do you think then in terms of actual events? What have you been able to dig out in terms of what actually will happen, so to speak, on planet? And when? Do you have a timeline or anything like that?
No, don't have any timeline on events. For instance, a lot of things are being buried. I bet you most of the people are listening to that'll listen to this have no idea that that something hit Mexico about a month ago, an asteroid or a comet. It left a 100-foot-wide crater. It knocked down a bridge and it blew out windows and houses that were miles away. It was only covered by local Mexican news. It never really made any international news. There was a series of massive earthquakes in the Solomon Islands and even tsunamis that wiped out villages, and that got very little news coverage. The Japanese earthquake happened the night before the earthquake down in Chile, and that earthquake got buried in the Chile earthquake. And basically, so the Haiti earthquake also got buried in the Chile earthquake. It's like, it's called a media blitz. It's what's happened here in America since 9/11. What they do is they bury one story in the next controversy. Every new story that comes out buries the next one, and it keeps you constantly, you know, it barrages you with so much information, you never have time to absorb it all and put it all together.
So what does it mean to you in terms of the what seemed to be heightened activity when it comes to earthquakes around the globe and kind of general anomalies here and there? What does it mean to you?
I tend to believe that since our Earth has an iron core and it has a liquid outer core and also a liquid magma mantle, that since this is mostly metal, it's metallic. And if you've got an object like a brown dwarf star in space, it's going to interact magnetically with the magnetic metal that's in our planet. So as it passes by on one side, it pulls the pressure of the metal over to one side, which causes earthquakes and volcanoes like the one in Iceland. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name of that thing, but the Iceland volcano that's erupted, and they expect to get worse.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. I don't know Icelandic myself, so I wouldn't dare pronounce that either, but what do you think then that this is? Are we looking at the same Planet X as many other researchers out there are looking at as well? Is this Nibiru of Zachariah Sitchin? That are we talking about the same thing here, Lucas?
Well, I believe that we're talking. All right. The way that the disinformation works is they put out a little truth and they attach it to something very extraordinary. Like, for instance, extraterrestrials living on a planet that's locked in with a brown dwarf star. Well, if you look at it would be very hard for life to develop on a planet, say Nibiru, and with a brown dwarf star, because all the brown dwarf star does is emit X-rays and infrared. So it would be very hard to sustain life on a planet like that. So what they do is they bring out the story and then they attach it to something very extraordinary so that it's not believable. And I believe that that's what they've done with this whole, Anunnaki thing and, the Nibiru. Yeah, I tend to think that, personally, I think that it's probably a star with another planet locked in orbit with it. That's just my own personal belief, but I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm not, like I said, it could be something totally different. And to me, it's not really so important that we find out what it is. It's more important that the people are prepared for the event.
Absolutely, and let's talk about that a little bit later as well. I want to ask you also if you do you tie in ET at all into any of this? Does it have any role, so to speak, to play in your theory, your ideas here?
Well, I don't know what to believe about that. I scientifically or statistically speaking, it's probably statistically more odds that there are beings out there than there are not, due to the sheer number of stars, galaxies, and planets out there. Now, if we were a technically advanced race, say we were a million years more advanced than we are now, and we had the capability to go to another planet and watch an event go down, there could very well be, we probably, since we're very, we're explorers, we would probably want to go to another planet and see what the events are. See, I personally believe that we were much more civilized a long time ago. There is a monolith on the planet of Mars. There's a monolith on the moon of Mars. There's a monolith on the moon. Also, the Sumerians knew that the planet Uranus was green and Neptune was blue. They also knew that the planets went around the sun and that they were round. How did we lose that basic, simple knowledge that the planets went around the sun and the planets were round, and all of a sudden we start thinking the sun goes around the planets and that the planets are flat? So, you know, we lost that basic knowledge. And how would the Sumerians know the colors of the planets without having seen them? You know, that's a pretty extraordinary thing.
And what's your theory about that? Did they get help from outside, or did they have way much more advanced technology than we believe they had?
Well, my personal theory on that is that a long time ago, around 12,000 years ago, there was a place called Atlantis, and it was off the coast of Florida. If you go onto Google Maps, you can look at Florida, and you go down to the southern tip, and you go out off the coast, and you will notice that there is definitely what used to be a massive freshwater lake that existed when the oceans were 400 feet lower than they are now. See, Plato described Atlantis as being as big as a continent, and on the Atlantic, well, the only other place, the only place that fits into that category is America. So Google has blocked out, basically, if you look at that image there, you'll notice right to the left of that freshwater lake, you'll notice that Google has taken a whole area that's like 50 miles by maybe 200 miles and blurred it out underneath the water. You can see everything clear except for that little area. And I also personally believe that that's why they created the myth of the Bermuda Triangle, so that they could keep planes and boats from going through that area. And that's why so many people were shot down, or because maybe they flew over ancient cities and saw things that they weren't supposed to see when the water was very clear. And as soon as you start to see that, then you start to ask questions of what is the city, where did this come from, and who was this? That's why they cover up the Atlantis thing so much, because it starts sending people down the rabbit hole and asking questions of who were these ancient people. So if you go back in time, you can, if you look at today's world, you can see that here we're going to the moon. At the same time, there's half of the planet is basically almost indigenous, you know, or at least third world state. So it's really easy to understand that one part of the world can come so much more technically advanced than the rest of the world and go out into the stars or go out into the solar system, while the rest of the world is still hunters and gatherers. And I believe that Atlantis at the time had become technically advanced, and that they possibly went to Mars and the different places and put up monoliths, because that's what humans do. We explore, and then we mark our territory when we do that. And they probably knew that there was going to be a cosmic event, as Plato describes it. The Atlanteans were at war with three different nations at the time. It's kind of uncanny that America is at war with a bunch of nations right before this event, because they're trying to basically get their hands on the world's resources before the event happens.
Do you think there's something else to invasions of the ancient lands of Babylonia, as it were, Sumeria, going, that America is going to Iraq, what is it now, seven years ago? What's that all about, do you think?
Oh, yeah, there's probably a lot of archaeological exploration going on. They found the batteries of Babylon. They say that they were used for electroplating, but first of all, you'd have to come up with the whole theory of electricity first. I mean, here we're stuck in this false paradigm that Benjamin Franklin discovered electricity, but obviously 6,000 years ago, or at least 3,000 years ago, they knew how to use electricity on a limited basis, and we don't even know how much they used it, because generally people, what I believe is that the Atlanteans knew that there was going to be an event, and they were trying to sum up the world's resources and get ready for it. And then the event happened, wiped out most of their main cities, and then the people that were left jumped on boats, spanned the globe, created Easter Island, the pyramids, Angkor Wat, things like that, and they all created them in a way that they were lined up with the sun and the stars to try and show future generations that this is what happened.
And what are they telling us today in that sense? I mean, people are bringing up things now in terms of Mayan calendar. We're beginning to realize I mean, this is recent. If you look at history, very, very recently that humankind, or at least the alternative researchers within the fields here that we're talking about, have begun to notice these kinds of things. You know, that alignments with the stars. We're looking at processional information in many cases, encoded into temples and buildings and things like this, which potentially and could be telling us about the story that happened in the past. And if it happened in the past, and if we're looking at a cyclical event, then it's definitely something that's going to come back towards us again, or come hit us again, so to speak, right, Lucas?
Well, what I've noticed is that almost everything is cyclical. If you look at the cells of your body, and if you look at nature and the seasons and all that stuff, it's pretty much all a cyclical event. And so why would things, why would things in the cosmos not be cyclical when most of the, most everything in the universe seems to be cyclical? So that's what I think, is that it's just a cyclical event that just happens every so often, and they were they're preparing for that.
So how much do you think is cover up and disinformation in terms of what is happening on the news and so forth in these days? If we look at at the earlier this month, NASA came out and said that they're searching. They've been doing this for a long time, on and off actually, but again, for newcomers to these topics, NASA came up and said that they're searching for something they call the invisible death star, that they think is circling the sun, which is catapulting potential catastrophic comets towards the Earth. They call it the Nemesis. They think it's about 5 times the size of Jupiter, another one of these kind of brown dwarfs that you mentioned before, Lucas. But why do you think they put out stories like that? Is it to entice people to realize what actually is going on, or is it disinfo, or are they just, they're not aware on a bigger level? They just, actually are reporting on what they seem to be finding out there. What do you think?
Well, I believe that the 2012 is disinformation, that that's when everything is all over and done with and a new age begins. So I don't think that it's just a one event. I think it's a series of events that, earthquakes, tsunamis, things like that, that happen one after the other until it builds up to a bigger event, and then it's all over. So I think that the whole 2012 is the disinformation.
So what, in your opinion, then, points towards the fact that this potential catastrophic event will happen before 2012?
Well, just the mere fact of how things are changing so tremendously, how many things are hitting the planet, how many earthquakes and tsunamis have happened, and, the weather changes, and, things like that. So I think that, there's definitely going to be more events coming as we get closer to the main event, which I don't know exactly when that's going to be. I think that it's probably going to be before 2012.
So what are some of the signs, so to speak, that you're looking for in order to try to verify when this is going to happen?
I don't know if there's going to be any verification when it's going to happen. I think that that it's just going to be a matter of being in the right place and the right time when it does happen.
All right. Would you care to talk a little bit about what has happened to you recently in terms of people coming out against you and talking about various things? Maybe they don't like the fact that you are addressing some of these issues. Do you care to talk about that a little bit?
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up there. I didn't hear the question.
All right. You mentioned before we began recording, Lucas, that you have had some problems with people who are approaching you, and they don't seem to like the fact that you're talking about these things. Could you talk a little bit about that and what they're talking about?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the majority of people out there are very happy about this, but I have, let me give you for instance, I set up a meeting yesterday to go down to the bookstore where I gave this Brave New Books, where I gave this presentation. Well, I set up this meeting with the owner of the bookstore and with the guy who filmed the presentation. Well, I got there, I walked in the door. Within 2 minutes of me walking the door, somebody called and said that they were looking for Lucas. Well, the owner, Harlan, was like, he said, "Well, Lucas isn't here right now." And the guy goes, "Well, I'm calling from Denver." And Harlan said, "Well, your caller ID says you're calling from Hawaii. And the guy in a very condescending voice said, oh, you're really good, aren't you? And he goes, I'm in Denver taking care of my mother. And then he gives him his name, which had the word jackal in it. And a jackal is an assassin. So there is definitely people out there who are, it was very uncanny that they knew that I had walked into the bookstore. Within 2 minutes, they were calling for me. And that kind of sent a shiver down my spine for sure.
What do you think that means? I mean, what have you been talking about in terms of Denver and the importance of Denver Airport?
Well, obviously the elites don't want a bunch of people moving to Denver, and it's probably not in, when you think about it, when you really sit back and think about it, it's probably not in people's best interest to move to where those guys are, because, you know, they're going to have their little setup and they're probably not going to let anybody else in. You know, there's a lot of places around the country or the world that people can go, you know, up in the mountains, whether it be New Mexico or through Arizona or whatever. But, you know, I wouldn't generally say to anybody, the only reason I was going to Denver is because I already had work lined up there. And, you know, I necessarily wouldn't have picked that place if I wouldn't have a job already lined up there. So I would just say that, you know, being at the high ground would probably be the best bet when it comes to this sort of thing.
Okay, high ground some potentially mountain regions and things like that. What is some of the other things in terms of what do you think people could do? Because I mean, I guess if we look at it from this point of view, you're in one sense warning people that something is potentially coming and so forth. Is this for the sake of survival? Will it hit the earth, do you think, equally everywhere? Will it be as bad everywhere? Maybe there's somewhere that is not going to be struck. Do you expect people to kind of drag out their roots, so to speak, out of the ground to go live somewhere else in order to try to stay away from something that potentially might happen in the future? It must be dodgy to kind of to approach this subject in that sense. Do you feel very secure in your theory, so to speak, that yes, this is going to happen? It's a fact. Or do you have doubt in terms of it might not happen?
Well, when I put out the presentation, I specifically said I wanted people to prove this wrong. And in fact, it's even on the website, therabbitshole.com, is that I was really hoping. When I first built this, I just did it for my personal friends. I didn't know that this was going to go into the state. I did it for my personal friends, and I considered Harlan a friend, and I showed him. So he asked me to do the presentation at the bookstore, and I was under the assumption that there was going to be, you know, 15, 20 people there. I had no idea so many people were going to show up, and that so many people were going to, or that it was going to be videoed and put on the internet. So I had no understanding of that before the fact. And I pretty much believe I had not had anybody yet out of the hundreds of contacts that have contacted me. I have not had anybody yet come to me and say that I was all wrong. So that kind of, and the fact that I've been dealing with my phones being acting funny, my internet source has been very slow, even though I just reformatted and redid the computer. You know, all that stuff. I have to assume that I might be onto some, or I'm probably onto something here, because they wouldn't dedicate so much time if I wasn't. And like I said, when I did the 9/11 documentary, at least a third of the people came back and said, "Oh, you're a loon, tinfoil hat," you know all the things that they say. And with this, it's been virtually zero. I mean, maybe one or two emails out of hundreds. So I tend to think that I'm probably right about this.
Could any of this be a kind of, if you look, follow my terminology here, force, flag operations in that sense, that also perception about common catastrophes being given out now at this particular time in order to kind of get people more hyped up, maybe more scared, maybe more, I don't know exactly what the reasons for that would be. There's many potential beneficiary point of views for them in that scenario as well. But as you mentioned before, 9/11, you think, might have been designed also to kind of entice people against each other. What's different with this kind of event potentially coming down the road, Lucas?
Well, it was the ancient petroglyphs. That's what really tied it up for me, was not only there were spirals, there's also various petroglyphs that almost tell a story. Well, they pretty much do tell a story. They all try and tell people to go to where the goats are when they see the spiral. You know, so you have a lot of different ones, a lot of different petroglyphs that like show a spiral and show people run into the hills, or they show dead animals or wilted trees and wilted plants. So I tend to believe that they were trying to warn us, because those people back then didn't have any reason to put out propaganda. They had no reason to propagandize 3,000 some odd years in the future. So that tends to lend credit to the fact that this is just a cyclical cosmic event, and that the powers that be have been planning around this event for a number of years, and that's what it's all based on.
So is this their opportunity to kind of clean the earth from their point of view, from many of the people that they might want to get rid of, so to speak? And the best way for them to do that is simply not to tell people about the event that is upcoming, in order to not save as many people as possible. Do you think that that's the MO here, so to speak?
Yeah. I mean, they don't want people knowing about this, because they want to pick and choose who they want to know about this, because they have their genetic ideas of who they want to be in the new world, and they don't want everybody and their mothers and brothers and sisters and cousins all living through this event, because if they do, then there's going to be some explaining to do after the fact. You know, I personally just I'm looking out for myself and my friends. That's how this all started out, and that's all I wanted was, you know, I didn't want to go run into the hills and then be the only one of the people I knew to survive and then have to deal with the guilt of all that for the rest of my life. So I put this presentation together for them just to, you know, kind of get them out of the area while I could.
So what's your plans then, Lucas? What are you going to do?
Not exactly sure at this moment. I've been pondering different things. Not exactly sure, to be honest, because most of the people that I was concerned about moving are kind of locked into a life here. You know, they've got a family, a job, own businesses, things like that. And so they're not actually going to be able to get out of the area while there's a chance, even though they know what's going on. They're kind of stuck in the grind. And so I've been thinking about, you know, do I want to be the only guy to make it through this and then have to live with everybody's ghost for the rest of my life? I don't know. So that's been kind of, I'm going back and forth on that since this whole thing started.
Do you think the United States particularly is a bad area to be in, or is it as bad across the earth at this point? What do you think?
I think it's pretty much bad all over, not just the United States. It's anywhere that's going to be a mile lower than sea level. Like, for instance, I was talking to somebody up in Colorado. He said you can find shells laying on top of the ground all the way up until 6,000 feet. Well, these are not fossilized shells. That's the key to this whole thing, is fossils are not actual calcium like an actual shell. They've actually turned to stone throughout the years. And if you find shells laying on top of the ground, that tells you that those things were brought in here by big waves or something. Also, they found these huge dinosaur graves at the base of the Rockies and all that, like all the dinosaur bones all twisted together, and like the carcasses were washed up to the bottom of the Rockies, and then as the waves receded, it left their mangled carcasses there to form these huge dinosaur graves. So it could tell you that the places are high ground, whether it's Colorado, whether it's New Mexico, or whether it's the Andes Mountains or, you know, the Himalayas, whatnot. If you look on the presentation, you'll notice that there's one part of it where I show where they find the majority of the spiral petroglyphs, and the majority of them are all up in the Rocky Mountains in Utah and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of tells you that, the people that were living in the mountains at the time survived and then wrote down their tale and their little petroglyphs, and then humanity went on after that.
So do you think it's number of years do this come again and again? Have you been able to pin that down in terms of, some people theorize around 13,000 years? They're basically talking about the half point of the precessional cycle. Would you agree with that, or do you have another figure, another year there?
I don't know exactly. Don't exactly know on that. There's just so much information out there to, goodness. to make any assumptions about things. I just think that, you know, sometime very soon, within the next couple of years, that there's going to be a major event after a bunch of smaller events, and that, you know, the people that are living in the hills are probably going to be the most apt to survive through the event. And there's also there's also evidence to show, excuse me, that, all right, if you look back into the Bible, into the story of the Tower of Babel, everybody lost their ability to speak. Mm. Well, there might be a very scientific explanation for that, that if the world's magnetic field drops, that the human brain will be bombarded tremendously by not only subatomic particles from the sun, but also cosmic rays, which could break the neural net pathways in people's brains and take them back almost to an infant stage of thinking. So you have you know, this, all these people who lost their ability to think, and that's what I suspect may happen again, is that, you know, if the magnetic field goes down, we get bombarded with a bunch of cosmic rays, people are not going to be able to think correctly. I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but the state of Georgia amended its death penalty in 1996 to include the guillotine. And why would they do that? Why did they put, you know, 500,000 to 1,000,000 plastic coffins in the state of Georgia? Also, the Georgia Guidestones are in Georgia, and the capital of Georgia is Atlanta, which is a lot like Atlantis. Mm. So you have this situation where possibly there may be tens of thousands, hundreds, maybe even 1,000,000 plus people who are walking around who have no ability to think whatsoever. All they're just operating as basically all they can think about is hunger and thirst. And so what are you going to do with all these people? Yeah, I mean, it's a really hard situation to think about, but what are they gonna do with millions of people who have no brain anymore?
That seems to be happening a little bit already. In terms of, that's an interesting theory, though, in terms of the magnetic field and if it indeed loosens its strength and what the effects of that potentially might be. I also want to ask you a little bit about 500,000 coffins you mentioned in Georgia. Is this then potentially going to be used at one of the minor events, so to speak, because I'd reckon that there would be not enough, you know, organization to go around, so to speak, if a major event happens. It won't be time to put people in coffins at that stage, right? This must be something else they're planning these things for, right?
Well, I was thinking that, you know, not only did Georgia amend its death penalty to include the guillotine, but also there's a story, and I can't verify the authenticity of this. All I know is that I read it. It was about two GIs. I think it happened back in 1994, 95. Two GIs, they thought that the guys in their unit were smuggling drugs. So they went in and broke in late at night and went into these railroad cars and said that they had found a dozen guillotines bolted, brand new, never used, bolted to the floors of each railroad car. And there were several dozen railroad cars with these guillotines. So if you come to a situation where there's no electricity on the planet because all the power grids are dropped, and you come to a place where resources are real low, how are they going to deal with these hundreds of thousands of brain-dead people who have no ability or will never have any ability to think? They're going to need a mechanical means, and that would be the guillotine, because it's totally mechanical. They're not going to waste bullets. They're not going to have any means to deliver gas. They're only going to be able to use a mechanical means to deal with these people.
What can you say in terms of sun activity in this as well? Because that's another major factor, because you mentioned if the electrical grid goes down and things like that, and expected again then is that the sun activity will pick up here in the next couple of years, and it might be one of the strongest ever. It's the quiet before the storm, if you word it that way, and something might be on the horizon in terms of the sun. Do you think that the activity of the sun might increase because of potentially then an incoming object, the destroyer that you talk about? Or do you think the sun could alone actually produce all these effects that you've mentioned so far?
Well, yeah. I mean, it could be either or. The electrical interaction between that, the sun and whatever object it is, it could be just the mere fact of the magnetic field dropping. And that magnetic field protects the Earth and its inhabitants from from subatomic particles and cosmic rays. In 2009, cosmic rays were 19% higher than ever recorded. So that could also explain some of the craziness going on out there. You got all these little subatomic particles flying through your brain, causing people to think very erratically. And so I think that they could be either or, maybe the object causing an interaction or maybe just the dropping of the magnetic field.
So do you think there's a way to protect yourself in terms of that then? I mean, again, maybe underground is a possible solution here in that sense then. And I suggest that a lot of the elites, actually, that's what they plan to do, go underground. I mean, if we look at, for instance, make a fictional comparison, if we look at 2012, the movie, they are literally building these big freaking arcs right there to maybe to preserve themselves. And they're doing that, just as you suggested, high up in the mountains. But underground is another possibility as well, right? That could be potentially save you from this, the diminishing magnetic layer and so forth, right? Right, Lucas?
Yeah, and they designed that specially designed roof for the Denver airport. It was designed by NASA. You'll notice that roof is also connected to giant metal poles, which could probably be used like to ground out electromagnetic pulses. That's the way you would deal with EMPs, is you would want to ground them to the earth. So that could very well be, that's why they built that very expensive Kevlar type roof that was designed by NASA, is to block out the cosmic rays and possibly incoming space debris.
What can you say about other things in terms of the design? We have Masonic time capsules, we have interesting murals and all kinds of weirdness going on in Denver Airport. Tell us about it.
Well, definitely. Yeah, there's all kind of interesting stuff. The murals, all the Masonic stuff, the fact that it's called the Denver New World Airport. It was designed for the New World, and I don't know exactly what all of it means. It all pretty much has the same theme to it. You'll find a lot of apocalyptic type of things there. The Great Flood, the giant stormtrooper killing the dove of peace with the sword, and all the people dying and waiting in like an exodus line, people running to the hills. You got a lot of different murals. One of the most interesting ones is some horned creature sprinkling the seeds of life on a newborn baby and an ear of corn. You know, so it's almost like they're telling a story with these murals. And so there's a lot of little hints out there for sure. And they put a lot of them right there at that Denver airport. They're very symbolic.
Absolutely. Are there any other sites around the world that carry similar symbolic significance at this particular time? I always like to bring up the seed vault, the global seed vault up here in Svalbard, close to off the coast of Norway, which carries, as many people will know, genetic diverse seeds. And I hold the belief that at least if they're preparing for something, an event like this, that would be for them the perfect place to maybe store some of this seeds in order to bring them out after the catastrophe, when they rise to the surface again, so to speak, or come down from their high mountains, as it were, to restart, reboot the same civilization over again. Or it could also mean that they potentially are actually trying to kill off people with the aid of GMO. You know, if we have these Monsanto kind of Terminator seeds out there, which actually are very, very genetically not diverse, so to speak, so they actually, if something happens in terms of temperature on the planet or other kind of environmental properties change, these seeds actually die off, and we don't have the ability to actually grow food again. So that would be, in their view, a perfect way to kind of depopulate the planet, go to the food source, as it were. And this global seed vault might be a hint that they're planning for something like that in the future. What do you think about that, Lucas?
Well, yeah, definitely, that they built that seed vault back in 2006, and it's a combination of the Rockefellers and the Bill and Linda Gates and Monsanto and all that, and that they are definitely using that for an after the event, so that they can rebuild society. If you notice, if you look on Google Maps or Google Earth, you'll notice that not far from the Denver Airport are vast areas of lots of crops and things like that, and that there are three giant reservoirs not far away.
Very interesting. So what more can we talk about? I mean, we've kind of rushed through, as it were, all the different topics, and we really kind of have, I know that there's much more to talk about, but I kind of want to hear a little bit from your point of view of what is some of the new stuff that you've been going into, and what is where are the research taking you, so to speak, Lucas?
Well, recently I haven't, I've kind of taken a little break because, I mean, doing all that stuff was a lot of work and taxing on the mind for sure. So, I've just been kind of keeping track of current events and trying to plan what I'm going to do mainly. I've done a lot when it comes to putting all the pieces together, and now it was more or less time to worry about my own self while I have the chance.
So you mentioned that you really don't know in terms of where you want to go or where you think might be a good idea to go and so forth, but are you pretty much like hanging around and waiting for your friends right now and try to set things up, or are you still kind of doubting where and if you should go, or what's your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that issue, you know, because like I said, I don't want to go run into the hills and then be the only guy I know to survive. And you know, it's really hard to think about that. And at one point, you know, you have the need for self preservation, which wants to drive me to go into a safer area. But then all of a sudden, I also realize that, you know, what's my life going to be like if I go to an area and I don't know anybody that survives, and you know, I've got to think about all my friends for the rest of my life. You know, the Egyptians, when this happened back in Egypt, they celebrated a 360-day calendar, and then after the event happened, our calendar went to 365 days because it added actually 5 days to the orbit. Mm-hmm. And so the Egyptians still celebrated their 360-day calendar, and they specified those 5 extra days as days of the dead, where they mourned all their dead family and friends that died during the event.
That's very interesting. What can you say about the civilization chart that you drew up as well? We have this kind of waxing and waning, if you will, of civilizations. They seem to rise and fall with a kind of a regular pattern, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's kind of what started me down the, you know, part of the thing that started me is I've always been interested in to know if there was any kind of cyclical event that happened on the planet. And so it took me years to put that chart together. I started out, you know, just researching different civilizations, and sure enough, you see that there was definitely some event. And also, if you look at the bigger ice age chart, you'll notice that there's a definite saw blade type of look to it, that there's a cyclical event which basically every 90 some thousand years drives the world into an ice age. So, you know, scientists have been arguing back and forth about what causes the ice age, but it looks like we are overdue now for one, and whatever this event is going to be is going to actually push the world into a 80,000 year ice age.
Really? Because some people have speculated, you know, that one way to actually go out of this or potentially stop an incoming, you know, ice age in that sense is actually for humanity to increase the global warming or the greenhouse effect, as it were, to actually prevent from another ice age to grab hold and grip hold. And that would mean, if that knowledge is out there and if people, especially within the elite or upper echelons of the scientific community in one way are aware of this, then this whole thing that we're supposed to stop kind of all the carbon dioxide and all things that lead to increased global warming actually is kind of goes in line with the whole idea of the fact that they're trying to bring in also this catastrophe because they want it on some level. They're actually aiding it along, if you follow my train of thought there, Lucas.
Yeah, they're definitely aiding it along and trying to keep the public down from all this information. It's kind of a catch-22 situation. I mean, if they would have came out 20 years ago and told the public what they knew, the society would have already collapsed. Unfortunately, you know, society, people would stop going to work. They'd stop paying their bills. They would stop you know, basically producing food, and then we'd already go into this cosmic event with a collapsed society. So it's, like I said, it's kind of a catch-22 situation here. If you tell the masses of people, they will, the general public will just lose their minds and stop doing what needs to be done to get to keep life moving forward. And but then if you don't tell them, you're heinous, you know. So it's kind of a real weird catch-22 situation here when it comes to this.
Well, it's very strange. I mean, does that justify, in your view, their behavior? What would be the best way to go about this? I mean, do you think that the authorities, as it were, could say anything at all to the public without things radically changing, you know?
Oh no, they couldn't. It would radically change. The second that they said that there was going to be a cosmic event on this date, massive amounts of people would start running to the hills, you know, in places where there's no work, no infrastructure set up. And, you know, what would happen is society would just cease to exist as we know it well before we even get to the event. So I'm kind of torn on this, too, whether, you know, the public, that's why I'm really only sticking to, I don't personally want this information to go, I never want to see this information come up on Fox News or something like that, because it'll send the people into a tirade. I mean, people generally are, they think in the moment, and you know, they don't plan for things. And if all of a sudden they tell them that there's going to be this event, yeah, the people just rush into the streets and clog up traffic, and yeah, it would be a nightmare.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned before, Lucas, we've kind of very quickly gone through all the subjects, and at this point, I just want to leave the last couple of minutes kind of open to you, the floor, as it were. If there's anything that you want to mention or go into, I obviously want you to give out your website URL again so people know where to go. And are you planning any upcoming presentations and lectures, or what's next for you, Lucas?
What's next? I don't know, to be honest. I'm just taking this whole thing one day at a time. I mean, here I'm getting threats against me, and I'm getting a lot of weird things that are happening. So obviously these people don't want this information getting out. That's why I'm kind of sticking to shows with the people that already have open minds. If you present this information to somebody who doesn't even know that 9/11 was all malarkey, it's too much for them to handle at once. This
right.
is something that is, you know, mainly for people who are already halfway down the rabbit hole, so to speak, you know, because they can deal with this information. And not only that, they're the ones seeking the information. So they're the ones that deserve it the most, because they're actually out there looking for it and trying to find it. They have a bunch of puzzle pieces floating around in their head. They just haven't been able to put it all together yet. And that's why I kind of stick like to the smaller radio shows and things like that. I probably wouldn't agree to do any big, huge radio shows like any of those big radio guys out there. But I would definitely, not want the masses of people to know what's going on, because then nobody's going to make it. You know, I really myself only want free thinkers to get their hands on this information, because they're the ones that deserve it. And, you know, they're not caught in this little paradigm of Britney Spears and American Idol and all that. They actually care about, their spirituality and their future, and deserve this information more than anybody else, I think.
Absolutely. That's a very good point, I feel. And that information is definitely out there, and you, with many other researchers as well, have done your part, so to speak, to tie some of the different threads together and to paint a picture in terms of what potentially could be, happening and upcoming in the future. And I mean, it's very. I always like to listen to the theories in terms of what is potentially going to happen in the future. But as always, it's so difficult to know, if it's, really true or not. It's Planet X incoming. Is it really happening or not? I'm very just kind of in the middle of the road of that. I just have to see where the evidence leads me. And I'm not convinced at this point, so to speak, that anything at all actually will happen. But I'm very interested in it. And I understand, just as you have, Lucas, from the point of view that it's something that seems to be happening in the past in terms of major catastrophe. And just as you, I kind of cling to the cyclical idea and approach as well. So I definitely understand that that's the concept, and it potentially could be upcoming again in the future. But as always, is the question, when? And I think that potentially, and hopefully, I guess, in one way, the science will become prominent for those who have the eyes and ears to hear and see things, so they have time to prepare in their own time, so to speak, in terms of what they consider these the evidence to be, so they can actually prepare, get out, or at least do something in order to preserve themselves and their family or their friends and so forth, but at the same time also have a kind of a very laid-back attitude towards it all. And I kind of want to ask you, as a way of maybe closing up for this hour as well, Lucas, in terms of what you feel about that as well, that are you like panicky in terms of, oh shit, I got to get out, I got to save my ass, I got to make sure that, you know, that we all survive, or do you have a more laid-back approach to it? They're like, ah, well, whatever, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it's a cosmic freaking, you know, planet that is coming in here, a monster catastrophe scenario, it's very unlikely that any of us will survive anyway. You know, how's your approach in terms of spirituality? Do you have that idea that or approach that if I'm meant to survive, I'm gonna do that. It all depends on timing and where I'm at that particular point in time, and that will kind of save me, if you know what I'm getting at.
Well, I don't really honestly follow any specific religion. I believe in a higher power, and you know, I believe that like it says, God helps those who help themselves.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it's like I said, I don't follow any specific religion or anything, because I think they've all been usurped by the powers that be to manipulate the public. But at the same time, I don't believe that. I believe that, like I said, you know, you help yourself, and the people that told Noah that he was insane and to go wear a tinfoil hat, well, they weren't so lucky. And sure. Noah saw the signs, and his genes and the people that lived with him went on to form us now. So I tend to think that it's those who have, you know, the ability to see what's going on and to make plans around it. And me, I'm not panicky anymore. You know, for a couple of weeks when I first figured this all out, I was a little panicky and was ready to jump in my vehicle and take off for the hills. But lately, I really don't care, to be honest. it's not something that, you know, I'm going to attempt to survive. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. It's not a big deal to me anymore.
All right, Lucas, that's what we got here for this time. We've really enjoyed having you on the program, obviously, and I want you to give out your website, I guess, address again, so people know where to go to find out some more stuff. And again, if they haven't already seen your presentation, they can go online and look at it. But give us your URL again, Lucas.
All right, it's www.the-rabbits, with an S, RABBITS, -hole. .com. So that's the-rabbits-hole.com. And there's also a forum on there too, that you can join the forum and the discussion board.
All right, Lucas, thank you again very much for your time. Stay cool, and I hope that we can have you back here then in you know, for another show, and that we're all still around at that point. I can carry on speculating, at least, of incoming catastrophe, because I certainly don't want it to happen, you know.
Definitely, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Lucas.
Oh, thank you.
Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you? Where are you going to? Do you know? Do you get what you're hoping for? When you look behind you, there's no open doors. What are you hoping for? You know.
That's our program with Lucas. Thank you for listening. Check out redeyescreations.com for much more radio, TV, and our members area. My thanks to Fredrik, Elizabeth, and Lana. We'll be back soon with Sonia Barrett, and you'll find more upcoming programs and guests in our radio archive. Take good care, and we'll talk more soon. Bye-bye.